You're listening to the Mental Health and Ministry Podcast. We're your hosts, Austin Brown and Tim Stoner, mental health workers with a background in ministry.
Ministry is messy and presents unique challenges when it comes to addressing issues of mental and emotional health.
This podcast is about equipping ministry workers with a holistic perspective of mental, emotional, and spiritual health. We're glad you're here.
So thinking about those that are maybe in vocational ministry, you know, whether it's a missionary out on the field trying to serve others or somebody sitting in a office at a church and help somebody as they're hearing the grief story, or maybe sitting with the family who's lost a loved one, they don't necessarily have all the grief training necessarily, but what might be really useful or even necessary for them to like understand about how to help these people as they're feeling called to walk alongside people who are experiencing grief?
The biggest and the most important thing is first and foremost to do your own grief journey. Mm. Right.
But that's hard work. It's
to get in touch with your own grief. And you may not feel like yours is as bad as someone else, but there's a legitimate reason. You know, there's legitimate grief in the life of every single person. And I like what Tim said, you know, earlier, even just like a grief timeline, you know, what are the significant losses, 0 to 6, mm-hmm. elementary school, junior high. I think there's a lot of different ways to do our own grief work if we're going to just kind of sit down and try to explore it. I personally like that one because I think it forces us to evaluate each stage of life. You know, Austin, you and I come from the Joshua Center, and one of the things I learned from Ryan Reyna was kind of your top 10s, you know, like what are your top 10 losses? And I really like that too. I think that one's really good. I've found in this context of just sitting down and trying to do your own grief work holistically that oftentimes people kind of miss stuff.
Sure.
And I like that one more when it's something specific,
yeah.
You know, that helps you organize it. And so what's your grief and how do you respond to pain and loss? What are your go-to responses? Are they to isolate? Are they to medicate? Are they to cry, you know,
yep.
et cetera. Knowing your own responses to grief will help you as you lean into someone else's. Lean into someone else's pain. You can kind of start to notice your physiological response when they start going there and be like, okay, this is happening to me.
I think there's just a lot of truth to that. And actually, hopefully, you know, if we do that work, you might learn how you tend to respond and find out that how you tend to respond isn't, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, maybe this isn't the best or healthiest way. I do tend to think that it's true. It seems to play out as a general rule that we will respond to others the same way we respond to ourselves, or mm-hmm. how I see somebody responding. If there's somebody that just gives the platitudes, they're in a better place, you know, God has a plan. Those are probably the things that they say to themselves in their own grief. That's how they try mm-hmm. to deal with things themselves is, you know, because I don't really have another tool. I don't really have another way to like make sense of it. And so I got to try to deal with it, make myself feel better by doing that. I even thinking about like when you called it medicating, Tim, and you're like, you lost your job. Let's go out to eat, yeah. you know,
let's go spend money.
Yes.
You know, I laughed because that was so true. It's what we do. Yeah. Yes.
And so that's what, you know, whenever I'm sad, what do? Well, I go out to eat or I go spend money. So whenever something bad happens to you, okay, let me take you on a shopping trip, you know, yeah. like we tend to play those things out. At least it seems to be that way as I've observed it. We tend to respond and do things to try and help other people the same way we try to help ourselves.
Absolutely.
It seems like with every single one of our topics, I think it's true with grief is just dismantling the shame alongside of experiencing grief. How do you feel like shame accompanies grief?
Yeah, I think the biggest way shame impacts grief or accompanies it is it usually tries to keep us from it. Shame is real, and tries to protect us, right? If I can shame myself, then I'm protected from you hurting me. Mm-hmm. And so it'll often act as a barrier. Mm. And Tim, I know that you've kind of talked about this before. Would you add anything to that? I know you have some thoughts there.
I think it's really true. Like we feel bad for feeling bad, you know, like yeah. We really do a good job at like compounding, you know, whatever it is, anxiety, depression or grief, because we're just like, oh, I shouldn't feel this way. I should be stronger. My disposition should be sunnier. You know, I'm a downer for my friends and family because I'm dealing with this. I need to get over this, as opposed to I'm feeling some things that are pretty heavy, and I should at least acknowledge that I am, some wounds are closing right now, and it's going to take some time. Mm.
But Tim, we are supposed to grieve, not like those who have no hope.
Oh yeah. Right? That's right. Absolutely.
Sometimes scripture gets thrown into the shame mix.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's one of the things that can happen here. And so would you maybe talk through that a little bit, Jenny, of just like scripturally, what do you see in terms of grief and what's appropriate? What's, I don't really like the term, mm-hmm. but it's used a lot. What's biblical? What's the biblical approach or understanding of grief?
Can I go back real quick and answer a little bit more on the helping? You know, once we've done our own grief work, and while we're doing our grief work, right? It's not like you need to go do this before you can be with another person. I think the challenge is to slow down and to not be the faith expert or the spiritual expert. That there's a time and a place for that. But to really be present in another's pain is not about taking away their pain or giving it the answer, but really bearing witness to the struggle and just having that curiosity about what they're going through. And that takes us tolerating our own anxiety, our own grief, our own whatever's on our minds, right? So in Zynga Harrison's an addiction doctor that I listen to a lot, and I like what she says about being the strongest nervous system in the room. You know, like I can handle your grief and whatever's going on for me right now.
Yeah.
And that might be grief and it might not, but I can hold space for that. Does that make sense? Like I can be at that pace with you, even though that's not where I'm at.
I want to push on that a little bit, 'cause I agree with that. But I think it's possible to hear that and think you need to be the strong one, right? You just need to be strong for other people. And so many times that's actually used as a way to avoid our own grief. I just need to be strong. And so I'm not paying attention to what's going on to me. But you're actually talking about, you pay attention to what goes on for you. What is your grief? And it becomes a place that is so familiar to you that when you go sit with someone in their hard place, in their grief, in their sadness, you're familiar enough with your own hard place and your own sadness that it's, you can go there with them and not leave them alone there.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it can so easily be, you could so easily hear like, go be strong.
Right.
Right. And that's not what we're saying. You know, our mutual friend, Joy McGowan, you know, has a podcast, and she always says like, it's okay. Like, I don't want to have to be strong. Like, I want to be weak.
Yes.
You know, like, yes. It's okay to be weak. Oh, yeah. And that's not what we're saying here. Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard that. I think another example of grief, right, is difficulty in marriage, in the marriage relationship. And I have heard that multiple times, especially from, and I think a lot of this is culturally, but especially from the women and in a marriage when it's hard, you know, or there has been infidelity, and, you know, the woman says, I'm getting praised for being strong. Like, I don't want to have to be strong, right? I don't want to have to be strong here. I shouldn't have to be, because this wasn't right and this wasn't fair to me. And it's not fair that I should have to be the strong one, right? And so the thing that other people understanding, like, oh, this is a really hard thing to go through, And we would say, yeah, it makes sense that there's some grief here. But our encouragement is to say, oh, you're doing such a good job. You're doing such a good job dealing with this. Like, I can't believe how good you're doing. You're so strong. You know, you're so brave. And there's some truth to that, right? That's speaking probably to some resiliency, which is a good thing, to be able to be resilient in the face of hardship. But also, some of the other messages there that can come are like, you have to be strong, right? You are not allowed to be weak. You're not allowed to acknowledge that this is hard and it's suffering. The suffering is hard. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think that's another example of how really good intentions and trying to show up for other people sometimes can kind of go awry. But you know what? If we've gone through our own grief work and grief story, then we probably know a little more clearly how much we need to be able to be in that broken place and have other people show up for us there and love us there and be in that broken place with us, not leave us alone, to not feel like we're expected to be the strong one. And so I can know that in myself. And when I see you and your pain, I can go there with you instead of celebrating that you're strong and that you're not showing your pain. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. And in that, there's just such a calling to our longing, right? A connection to our longing of what the person that you're sitting with, what they're saying, what are they really longing for? And I can sit with that. And maybe that doesn't mean that it's strong, like in the sense that we were just talking about, like that reframe, but it's like, I don't know, I guess I use the word strength because I mean it, to me, it means being able to tolerate that place, like tolerate the silence, the mourning, the irrational thoughts that just you need to say just to get them out. You're not landing there. You're not, you know, I can handle whatever is in the room because I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah.
There's a difference between relief and restoration, right? And oftentimes we want to get relief, like in the moment, let me give you the answer. When really restoration takes time.
Yeah, the low and slow, like you said earlier.
Yeah, right. Slow and slow.
So I'm curious, like, because I think we've talked a lot about horizontal grieving, like relation to others, relation to ourselves. What do you see healthy grief, or I guess grieving vertically, like you're grieving. I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, but like, at least like with God in the room, because all throughout scripture, like there's Psalm 137. It's like, we sat down by the rivers of Babylon and we wept when we remembered Zion. You know, it's like, that was the call to worship, which is, it's like the saddest worship song ever, where they're like remembering, man, life used to be great before we were exiled to Babylon. But I'm wondering, like, how do you see grief coming out in worship or in our community, like our spiritual community, how do we see grief? Like, how should we approach it with God in the room? I know that's a huge topic, but I'm curious if you could help me make sense of that.
I love that. And I think you kind of said it, and I really see that grief is worship. And what is grief? Grief is saying, this isn't okay. This isn't perfect. Something ended. This isn't the way that I wanted it to be. Well, isn't that a declaration that we're not in heaven, that we're not with Christ face to face in the purest form? Yeah. Like, grief is declaring worship. And to me, I think that's the purest, sweetest place to be, is to declare to God, this world isn't okay. Yeah. Like, this isn't perfect. You know, I personally, one of my favorite passages is Lamentations 3, where Jeremiah says, my lament is always before me, the wormwood and the gall. right? The bitterness, like it's right here in my throat. It is not going away. And then he also says, and in this I call to mind, and this I hope is mercy and are new every morning, great is his faithfulness. Like, and that's true too, right? And so as we see that in the Psalms of Lament, we see that in Job, we see that in so many passages throughout scripture, that if I'm truly lamenting and truly mourning and grieving, I will get to the declaration of hope and joy and trust. I'm not saying I'm not, right? It's both. And I think, Austin, that's what you were saying earlier, like, how do we live in both? It's doing both. And oftentimes we try to shut people down too quickly on the lament and try to give them the hope and right and all that because we're not comfortable with the grief. And are there people that get stuck in the grief? Oh, I think to a certain degree, it might be a little bit of complicated grief.
Yeah.
Right? Like I can't quite get past these emotions. I would say they probably haven't organized it enough and understood it enough to move forward. But I mean, I'm not saying that no one gets stuck in grief. I mean, I think that can happen. But that true mourning, I mean, it can be inconsolable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think we see that in scripture that, you know, Jesus wept for Lazarus and he knew.
Yeah.
Right. Again, another passage I like, Paul saying goodbye to the Ephesians, and it says they were inconsolable.
Yeah, that passage is beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, it's like they're like longing for him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, don't. Like, I mean, I just hear them saying, like, don't go. Yeah. You know?
They and, even know that he's going to be put in prison and
yeah,
put the belt around his wrists.
Yes.
Be like, this is going
to
happen.
So I think scripture teaches us to be honest about what we're feeling and what we've lost, but also looking to the Lord. Like he is, like you said, that vertical aspect, Tim, like he is, if we're truly grieving, he is the person we're talking to. Yeah. He is the answer, the truth, the hope, the, you know, all those things, and can handle our anger and inconsolability. Seeks me through my pain. I cannot close my heart to thee.
So I guess I'm wondering, you know, at what point would you say I'm not over my grief, but I know it doesn't have a hold on me like it used to? Like, what are some signs that has happened, or that you're just in a better place, or even in other people?
Yeah, it's, I like the way that you put that. It's that you can face it, that you're not running from it, that, you know, you can think about it. And it doesn't mean you may not have a little bit of grief again, right? But it's not totally consuming you. It's not taking you out for days and weeks at a time. And so as you wake up and you face the day, you know, you're not afraid. I like a passage in Psalms that says, I'm not afraid of bad news, right? Because my hope rests in him. And I think for those of us who are helpers, whether you're counselors or, you know, people are going to be listening to this who are ministers, you face the potential for grief every single day, yours or somebody else's. You go to a discipleship session or you go to call on someone or whatever, there's a pretty high potential they're going to tell you something that is hard or they're struggling with. And that can take a toll. You know, one thing we didn't talk about when we were talking about being a helper is just the vicarious grief build up just hearing other people's grief. And so I think that's health and healing, you know, and that it doesn't define you. That there are some people that choose to turn their grief into something that's an identity, whether it's, you know, I think of people I know who have created foundations for children that go through things, and it's happened because of a grief that they experienced. Of course, I think that's a beautiful thing, but it doesn't have to, right? And so how do you face that grief? I think really can say healed, in quotes, healed, yeah. You know, healing, you know, I have a father who has dementia, and every day is different. And so some days it's level 2 and some days it's level 8. But I have to check in with that grief so that I kind of know where I'm at as I go and sit with other people in their grief too.
Yeah. You had said earlier, as a counselor, right, sometimes we can get tricked into thinking we're dealing with our own stuff by sitting with other people in their stuff, in their grief. And that's not the same, right? And so you mentioned vicarious grief. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like what you're saying is the answer in almost all these cases is do the work, right? Do the work for yourself. Check on your own grief. And I think there's, we're probably biased being in this field, right? But it is helpful sometimes to have somebody else who is able to help hold those spaces for you. If you've never, I mean, I think personally for myself, like looking back, and I shared a little bit about just culturally some of the messages I picked up. And so it's really easy to, I think, to start going through your story and you don't always know what to do with it. Maybe you start mm-hmm. to see, oh, this is how I respond or how I've seen other people respond, but I have this idea that maybe there's a better way or a healthier way, but I don't necessarily know how to do that, right? Because it's one thing to kind of mentally have that in your head, like this is maybe what I should try to do, but to actually go through it. So to have somebody else to do that with you, and I think that's one thing with those who are in ministry, and we've said this in other places when we've talked to people, that a lot of times there's a lot of isolation. I think you brought that up earlier too, you know, as you would go and visit with people in the field, just a sense of isolation and aloneness. Maybe they can't reach out back to their supporters back home. But I think, you know, it's the same thing in our churches, pastors on staff. A lot of times there's a level of isolation all set with other people in their grief, but who do I go to?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. Who does the pastor go to? Yeah.
Yeah. And so mm-hmm. I think, you know, certainly being able to find somebody, it's a little easier now that we have, I mean, like we're talking over Zoom now. It's a little easier sometimes to be able to find a resource. Something I've met with multiple pastors in different areas of our state. So both in person and virtually, and grief has been a part of several of those conversations. And so just thinking about resources maybe for people going forward, for especially those in ministry, either for themselves or for other people, or maybe just to think about different ways to learn to think about grief or encounter grief, you know, as a resource, counseling is a possibility. We certainly believe that can be a really good thing since we're counselors. But do you have any other ideas, any other thoughts about resources?
Yeah. You know, my favorite one is probably going to be read scripture through the lens of grief. Look mm-hmm. for it.
Wow.
We have a tendency to recommend another book, right?
Yeah.
Here's another book that we're all reading. And so that would be my first and foremost, is just start reading scripture, looking for grief. What is mm-hmm. what does God say about grief? What are the people saying about grief? Where do you see grief? And I think that can be really transformational. I will go ahead and recommend or kind of mention a couple books. I'm not a big book person. I think that they can be a real distraction to actually doing the work, because then you just get another book. The one book I would recommend is Experiencing Grief by H. Norman Wright. And the thing I like about that book is it gives you a lot of questions to help you process. So I think that's a good jumping off place for someone who just doesn't even really know how to start engaging their own heart related to the losses that they've experienced in life. I think that'll help get started. And then obviously as a companion to scripture. Some people, you know, Shattered Dreams by Larry Crabb is one that I've had people mention that they like. What I hear a lot from people that, and I find this myself, there's not a lot of good grief books out there because they all try to just give you the answer. So that's why I like the Experiencing Grief one, is that it's more just questions to help you process.
So you're saying I can't just read a book and get over my grief, is what you're saying.
Right. Well, right. I think to make sense of what you're like, tie that together, you gave us a great framework earlier of saying relief and restoration right? And so a lot of, I think that's what you mean whenever you're saying, we just want the answer. Like, we're just going to the book to get some relief, to get the answer for how do we relieve this? And it doesn't, the books don't necessarily help us process through, do the organization work, do the honoring work.
That is a, I love the way you said that. Yep, perfect.
Okay. So I do have a couple questions. So when I was a pastor, there was a lot of times where I was like, do I bring this up? Like, say for instance, somebody passed away in someone's family. There was like this dichotomy of where I felt like, do I not talk about the person that passed away? You know, how do I interact with someone even like in a public setting where, because I feel this tension of, I don't want to step on this emotional landmine and not give them the autonomy to weep when they want to weep, if that makes sense. But I also want to be someone that's there alongside that person. So if I'm like, or how are you doing since your husband passed away? Or how are you doing today? Those kind of questions. Do you have any advice for that?
The short answer is, I don't think there's really an easy answer.
Okay.
You know, it's not always bring it up or never bring it up, right? But certainly I think bringing it up is probably the way to go, but I'm a grief therapist.
Yeah.
I hear more often than not, people don't bring it up. Every now and then somebody says, oh, they brought it up and I wasn't really ready to talk about it. And I think as pastors, as caregivers, as helpers, we can say, do you feel like talking about it today? You know, you kind of throwing it to them, you know, what's the word?
Lob it to them
and kind of see where they're at. And most people appreciate you even bringing it up. We're going to get it wrong sometimes.
Okay.
Right. We're going to say things like, I know how you feel, or like whatever. So just a lot of grace for ourselves and for them. Yeah. I tell the person in the grieving role all the time, like, grace for the other person. They're trying to be there for you, you know, like they're trying to help. The one thing I'd say is probably try to be more specific rather than how are you doing? Just be like, I was thinking about you. It's the 6-month anniversary, or the other day I heard on the news about this company and it made me think about when you lost your job, like, you know, kind of create a framework for them to engage it and then ask the question, rather than this general, how are you doing?
Yeah.
I share this sometimes with people because it's what I do for myself, right? Yeah. So is that thing, that dream, or that person is worth it? Mm-hmm. Like, they're worth remembering, mm-hmm. and they're worth having these hard feelings, the sadness, the pain, right? Like, that speaks to their worth.
Danny Herman, thank you so much. This has been wonderful and so insightful for me as a person and as a counselor. And I am sure now that I've had contact with you, I'm going to email you a ton of questions.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Yeah. Just thank you for your wisdom and insight and even vulnerability in answering some of the questions and having the conversations around grief. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for creating this environment to have the conversation. I hope it encourages those of us in this field and in the work of believers to slow down a little bit and engage with God in a new way.
Yeah.
And experience God in a new way through grief.
You've been listening
listening to the Mental Health and Ministry Podcast. The conversations had and material presented on the Mental Health and Ministry Podcast is for informational and educational purposes and is not a substitute for professional therapy or professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Incidental music is "O Love That Will Not Let Me Go," arranged by Caleb Paxton, recorded by St. Paul Worship Collective.
If you know someone who would benefit from this podcast, please pass it along and feel free to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Ministry and Mental Health is a podcast from Identity and Purpose, PLLC. For questions or to suggest topics for future episodes, send us a message, podcast@identitypurpose.org.
Thanks for listening.